who hated any writer besides himself, he used critiques as an assault rifle to mow down any young soul with the temerity to attempt the art that, in his mind, belonged only to him and a handful of his peers. Sure, there were the appropriate candlelight vigils and the church service to honor the brave soul who died fighting the good fight in his ivory tower, but right under the surface, the humor rolled dark and furious. I heard that the last pages he read really blew his mind. You know that saying, would it kill you to say something nice? Rachel guessed it had. The jokes and her connection with the man's grisly death gave her some level of notoriety in the English department, something that had its pros and cons. The con being that the rumor mill grouped her in with all the other young co-eds McNeely had been stooping and insinuations she detested. She hadn't been like all the others. She was certain that she'd been his favorite. There were two pros to the rumors, the first being that others on the faculty and even a few agents looking for newbie writers wanted to read the student novel that the great Stan McNeely actually liked. This attention got Rachel her first agent, Hank Wells, and eventually her first sale. The second pro was that McNeely's widow had given Rachel her husband's prized Underwood typewriter. This last little windfall was so unexpected that it would have been met with an editor's red pen if she'd ever tried it in her fiction. On hearing that her dearly departed, philandering husband had liked Rachel's writing, she'd sought Rachel out at the viewing. It was an awkward meeting, but the widow McNeely made it clear that life without her husband, but with her husband's royalty income, was a welcome turn of events. When she offered Rachel her choice of McNeely's personal items, it took only seconds to decide on the typewriter. The Underwood was the same one that had given the world McNeely's Booker Prize-winning novel Of God Alone, and, in her own not incapable hands, had since kicked out two well-reviewed novels with her name on the cover. One of them, her second, had even been called mind-blowing by a reviewer for the New York Times, who may or may not have meant it as a sly reference to the typewriter's pedigree. No, the Underwood had served her well until the last book. That was a different story. The reception of her last book had led to the other man in the front seat. A fifth of Jack Daniels, making a pleasant clink, clink, clink sound as it knocks against the painted metal of the antique typewriter. Daniels and Underwood, together forever. She glances back at her phone, but the map is gone. The pleasant view of her abstract self making steady progress through the world is now a grid of light blue lines on a white background and a single word in the top left corner of the screen. Searching, searching, searching. She laughs, hearing more bitterness and fear in the sound than she expects. She tosses the phone aside, now useless, and grips the wheel, noticing the sweat on her palms for the first time. A quick check in the rearview mirror shows an exact replica of the road in front of her, only with black, churning shadows filling the distant sky. Seeing it, her breath catches in her chest. She twists the mirror to the side so she won't be tempted to look back there again. She faces forward, trying to calm down. Her stomach rolls over on itself and she lowers her window to get some fresh air. It helps. The air, cool and sweet, filled with the smell of pine. She feels herself relax again, pushing aside all thoughts of the dark sky behind her. The Honda eats up mile after mile, straight as could be. Tall pines on either side of the road create a corridor that feels somehow both majestic and claustrophobic. A couple of checks of the phone shows the fancy map is out for good, but she's made her peace with that. She has the simple directions in her head. But that's what scares her. Wasn't life